Hello and welcome to Talking Spirits Podcast, episode number 24. I'm very happy about today's episode since it's once again about the bass, and my guest is a very special bassist, the Serbian and Austria-based double bass master Nenad Vasilic. Nenad has created a remarkable and very original body of work as a leader and as a sideman, and his records have been a huge influence on me since I heard his first album Folk Songs about 20 years ago. Most recently, Nenad got appointed as a professor for double bass at the prestigious Jazz Institute in Berlin, Germany. We have now been in touch for many years, and I'm very happy that he accepted my invitation for a chat. This conversation was recorded in October of 2020 already, and we are discussing all things bass, Nenad's path in music and life, the richness of the musical tradition of the Balkans, being a foreigner in Austria, and much more. If you are into bass and music, this episode is definitely worth your time. We are wishing a good time listening, and I will be back at the end of the episode. Hi, Nenad.
Hi, Armin.
Hi, I'm very happy that you're taking the time to be my guest today. Thank you.
It is my pleasure.
We are now like 8 months into a pandemic crisis, which is significantly affecting the lives of musicians and artists. Over the last couple of years, you as a bassist have been traveling a lot and touring. And so my first question would be, how are you today and how are you dealing with the situation as it is right now?
Yeah, well, the situation is pretty serious indeed. I mean, being a musician today is really a special task, if I may say so. We're confronting every musician and bass players. We're basically in the same scenario, canceling the gigs all the time. We are staying here with a couple of dates, you know, not really being able to play them. And it's been really a drama lately. I was talking to other musicians and I see that the motivation is gone, you know. So basically, I don't know for how much longer we can all take this situation. On the other side, I was pretty lucky to, I ran the studio in Vienna for several years, actually 12 years already. And I was always working in studio a lot. So I was lucky to get some free time to do my stuff in the studio. Basically, I was doing lately this project of mine, which I was waiting for a long time, which is bass and strings. And we did almost the half of the CD, which is really great. It sounds really, really beautiful, and I'm happy with the results and everything. I actually use this time to do some things that I cannot do when I'm on tour, you know. Basically, I think that's what everybody do right now, right? Like, yeah. Checking the basses, changing the strings, writing some music. And also, I got a teaching job in Berlin. I'm now teaching on the Jazz Institute of Berlin, JIB, that's the university. And, you know, somehow I'm holding my head over the water, you know, but actually I miss playing a lot, to be honest with you. This online thing is helping, and every now and then I play some gigs. It's not that I'm not playing at all, but I really miss some serious playing.
Yeah, I can totally agree with all you said. I mean, for me it was similar because when it all started, I finally had time to practice, to record, to write new music. Right. And also this is how I started this podcast, because finally had the time to do it. But at some point, after like 6 months, I also hit like a rock bottom where it was very difficult to stay positive. And, you know, and also with me the same. I also was lucky to play some gigs over the summer. Yeah. But of course, it's not the same, because with all the restrictions, it's a different experience, which also might be something, you know, where we can learn from, but it should not be permanent, hopefully.
And I think we learned enough.
Yeah, by now.
We can go back to normal now.
By now, it should be okay. I agree. Yeah. Maybe let's go back in time a little bit.
Why not?
How did it all start for you? How did music start for you? How did you become a bass player?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was really a small kid, you know, in the beginning, I was 5. I got a toy piano for my 5th birthday, you know. I think aunt of mine just bought it, you know, and I got this little toy piano. It was red and it sounded great, you know, and it took my attention completely, you know. So my mother and father, they decided to send me to the guy who was teaching the small kids. So basically, I started playing the piano. I started as a pianist. And I was playing the piano until the 12th, 13th year before I started playing the bass. And I was enjoying playing the piano. So basically, I had this classical education and piano was really my instrument. You know, I'm still playing it every day. The thing is, you know, when you get older, when you get with your friends out and you start listening to, so I was heavy metal, hard rock fan, you know.
Same here, 13,
and I heard... You know how it goes. And I heard Roger Glover, you know, playing Smoke on the Water. Everybody wanted to be a guitar player, you know, playing this riff. But I wanted to be a bass player in this song, you know.
Yeah.
I like the bass, that, you know, that part when he comes in, you know.
The 8th note.
I think it was a Rickenbacker, right? And that was the part when I went totally crazy about the bass, you know. But to be honest with you, me and my friends, we actually didn't know what instrument was that, you know. So we were asking around all the friends, you know, like, hey, do you know what's this? It looks like a guitar, but it's only 4 strings. What is it? And then finally we find out it's a bass, you know. And I only had one single task. It was to find the bass, you know. And I managed somehow. I think I was 12 or 13. I got my bass. And that was the moment when I finished my career as a piano player.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny.
So I think it was probably the same with you. You probably started with guitar or piano.
I started with the classical guitar and piano. But
right.
I had some affection for the bass as well. When I was listening to music or when I was watching videos of a band playing, I always paid attention to the bass and I felt attracted to the frequencies. And then when I came to Germany in 92 and I started to go to school, I got the chance to play bass at the school band because they had no bass player. And I said, yeah, I want to do it. And then the teacher who ran the band, he gave me a bass. And then I took it home and I started playing and I immediately knew, okay, that's it. That's what I want to do.
What was your first bass?
You mean the first one I owned?
No, the first one you played.
Oh, it's like it had a Höfner neck.
Okay.
And the body was just a piece of plywood. Somebody put it together, you know. There's some pictures of me playing it in the internet. Yeah, you know, it was not a particularly great bass, but I was...
Of course not. That's the point.
Yeah. I was so happy to have one, especially since I'm a left-handed, you know.
Well, yeah,
it's not, it was not really, you know, you could not just go and take...
And buy the bass, yeah.
Yeah. And
especially then, in the 90s, I think. Now the bass is pretty easy, actually.
Yeah, but yeah.
In the 90s, you could play like 4 or 5 basses, actually.
I mean, the first bass I really owned is a right-handed Samick bass. And then I just turned it around.
Yeah,
right. And I do still have it. I mean, I don't play on it. Yeah, I still have it. It's here.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then
I lost my first bass. So I mean, I didn't lost it, you know, it's lost in perception, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but then you started on electric, but how did you come to double bass from the electric?
Yes, I started with electric bass and I was playing electric bass for a couple of years, different bands. I was also a singer, you know. I was singing all the heavy metal songs, you know. I was real heavy metal dude. And after a couple of years, I realized I'm pretty serious about that bass, you know, and I was completely overwhelmed with the sound and the possibilities. And actually, I just wanted to be a musician. It was pretty much clear pretty early in my life, you know, that I want to do that. You know, I want to be a bass player.
Yeah.
And so I tried somehow to avoid going to the regular school. I wanted to keep going to the music school, you know, and there was a possibility to go to the music high school, you know, yeah, which is basically a normal school and the musical with some musical subjects, you know, and with a bass and everything. So that was 90s, you know, 80s, 90s. And you couldn't go there and play electric bass, at least not in Yugoslavia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you couldn't go to school with electric bass.
Yeah.
Basically, I realized pretty soon that this double bass is actually almost the same like electric, but if you play that one, you can go to school, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have all the time to practice your music, you know. And I was like, okay, maybe that's a not bad idea, you know, to start playing acoustic bass, you know. And this way I can learn more about the electric bass, because that was the thing that I wanted to do, you know. And I was like, okay, and then I don't have to go to regular school. I can go to music school and learn some harmonies and chord arranging and all that stuff, you know, which was really important for me. And, you know, play the double bass and electric bass. So I can go in the nights and play electric bass in clubs and do the thing that I love the most, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I started playing the acoustic bass, you know.
Yeah, but then it evolved into something, you know, over the years. When I see you playing the double bass now, it's amazing. So
yeah, it's, you know, I'm just talking to my son about these things. Actually, you cannot choose if you're an electric or acoustic player. You know, I always wanted to be an electric bass player, you know. That was my dream when I was a kid. And it's the same with him, you know. He's also playing electric. But, you know, I got a bunch of gigs on acoustic bass after the people realized that I'm playing acoustic bass. And I was like, you know, there is this, we were in the 90s, so everybody was playing electric bass. And I was this guy, 15, 16 years old, playing acoustic bass too, you know.
Yeah.
So, of course, I got all the gigs on acoustic, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I hope I'm going to play more electric, but that never happened.
It just didn't go that way. Yeah.
I just stayed on the acoustic because I had gigs on acoustic, you know. Pretty soon, I think I was 16, I got a gig in Kafana. You know, and in the Symphonic Orchestra of Niš, where I was born, and I was playing every day. You know, I had like rehearsal in the morning and gig in the evening, you know, playing acoustic bass. And, you know, I kept playing in all these bands where I play electric bass, but actually, you know.
Yeah.
When you play 300 times a year bass, you know, then you're an acoustic bass player.
Yeah, but so it's so funny how, you know, just things just happen and then you get directions for which way to go without consciously planning on it or wanting it.
What about you? Are you playing you're also playing the double bass, right?
Unfortunately, no.
You know, I think I saw you somewhere with playing some. Or was that an electric double bass or something?
No, I, you know, with me it was a bit different because I was a metal kid as well, like really crazy. And then, you know, when I started, there was also a jazz band at school. And this guy, he wanted me to play because he also didn't have a bass player. And he always dragged me like, can you play my band? I'm like, no, I don't want to play jazz. You know,
yeah.
I'm a metal guy. I don't want, you know, and so also my mother, my parents, they tried to, you know, convince me. They wanted to buy me a double bass, but back then I was very narrow. You know, I was not interested. And then, of course, later, you know, later in time, I started exploring jazz music and different styles of music.
Right. Yeah.
But somehow I never came to playing double bass. But I'm considering, you know, to maybe just get one and start,
yeah,
because it would be.
It, I think it would be a good thing for electric bass player to get a half bass, you know, like the one I saw the Wu-Tang playing one.
Yeah,
it's pretty, and he sounds amazing on that.
Yeah,
thing, you know? Because it's actually pretty close to the size of the electric bass, you know, but it's not a cello, you know, it's still the bass, you know.
Yeah,
and actually that's pretty interesting instrument. You know, also for a double bass players, you know, and this could be an entry thing for electric bass player, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm considering. Actually, I already had a plan to how to realize it, but then Corona came and it was a bit, you know, it became a bit difficult money wise. But it's still on my mind. I don't know if I would ever become like a great double bass player, but it would be a challenge to.
Of course,
just start, you know, and see what happens.
It's about exploring things, you know. I started working recently with an Italian guy who is building very, very nice electric double basses, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you anyway about him.
It's really, really interesting instrument because I was really I couldn't find a good treble bass or a good electric double bass for years. I wasn't actually even searching that much, you know, but I was trying every now and then, you know, testing instruments and everything, and I was pretty skeptical, you know, about this whole thing. But then this guy came, his name is Roberto Franceschini, and he's from Nova Gorica. I think in Italian it's Gorizia, or something like that.
True.
It's the same town, you know, it's on the border with Slovenia, and this guy is making two models of the double bass. And both are amazing, really. I never tried the bass like that. Over the amp, it sounds almost like my acoustic bass, you know?
Yeah.
And you can actually split it down, you know, you can take the neck off, you can take everything off, and you can really travel with a plane, you know? So I like it. I like it more than this David Gage things, you know, which looks like acoustic basses. And this feels like 100% acoustic bass. And with Rally's pickup, it sounds almost like my acoustic bass.
Yeah, we have a friend in Gorizia, Aldo De Luca. He's a guitar player. He's in the blues music.
They're playing together.
Yeah, exactly. And Aldo told me about Roberto and about his basses.
And Roberto's a great guy.
Yeah, really. So I was also considering. I talked to Aldo about it if he maybe can make a contact because I was also considering.
Yeah.
Maybe to start with this instrument, you know. So,
but I don't know if you knew, but Roberto is actually making some amazing electric basses too.
Yeah, I saw it, of course. Yes,
really.
And so it was so funny for me when I saw you playing his instruments, you know.
Yeah,
because
it was an accident.
Yeah. We talked with Aldo about while we was on tour with Henrik Freischlader. We visited him in Gorizia and we stayed there for like 2 days. And then that's when I met him and when we talked about it. And so I was very funny when I saw you playing his basses.
Yeah.
And
I
think eventually I will contact him at some point.
I strongly recommend because I really, you know, I started working with this guy. We had a great vibe between us, actually. He came to Vienna and he brought his both basses, you know, so I can try them. And I was really amazed, you know, with the sound. And basically, we made the deal. So I'm actually endorsing this guy totally, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have many endorsements because I don't like, you know, writing on my website that I'm playing instruments that I actually don't play, you know.
No, it should not be that.
I only work with guys, you know, like the equipment and gear that I really use, you know. So I'm working for domestic and I'm actually using these strings, you know, for my whole life. And I work with Bertolini guys. They're really cool guys, you know. I really like their pickups on the bass. And I'm working with Roberto, you know, so... Basically, only the thing where we can do on the 100%, you know, endorsement thing exclusively. But it's important, you know, that you like the instruments, that you like the product of the company, you know.
Not just
writing down, okay, I play this and this, and you actually never use it, you know.
No, it's the same for me. I mean, I never did any deals with where I don't like, you know, I have no use for the instrument. And also for me, you know, it became very important also to have a good vibe with the people, you know, not just business, but you need to be connected.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, but at some point during the 90s, you decided to leave Niš and Serbia and to go to Austria. I think it was to study music. But what prompted your decision to leave Serbia, and why did you choose Austria as your destination?
Well, it was pretty easy. You know, you remember the times that were like, we didn't have any internet over then. You know, we couldn't collect the information from the screen. You know, we had to really research, you know, and kick and stretch, you know, to find info about things, you know. And I actually find out that there is a school in Vienna for jazz, which was a conservatory, somehow I forgot the name. And there was another school called American Institute of Music in Vienna. And I heard about the school in Graz, you know, and I knew about the Berklee. That was my info, you know. And I was pretty sure when I was 16, I was pretty sure that I'm going to go away from my hometown to study music somewhere in the world, you know, and try my luck, you know, finding good bands and playing with good musicians and everything. I wanted, you know, I just want to play the bass, you know, all the time with everybody, all kinds of music, you know.
Yeah.
And as I told you, so I basically knew, okay, the USA was too far away, so my safe bet was Austria, you know, to go to Austria and try to check the schools and everything. So I applied in Graz University, and I came actually to Vienna, you know. And I checked the American Institute of Music and this conservatory that was in Vienna. And the American Institute was very interesting for me because it was the thing with electric bass, you know. So I thought, okay, finally now I can really do more electric, you know, again. But it was, to be honest with you, I think it was way, way, way over my budget, you know, which was pretty low, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was really the most expensive school. It was even more expensive than Berklee, I think, or something like that. It was a private thing. You couldn't get any stipendium or things like that. So I went to Graz, you know, because I got invitation from them to go to do the audition for the university, you know.
Yeah.
And then I went to Graz from Vienna, and Graz is a small place. I didn't really like it, you know, because it was like too small, you know. It's more like, how should I put it? This is the town when you get older, you know, and you need some
need,
you know,
peace and retirement.
Safe place to you know, not happening a lot.
Yeah.
So I basically went over there, and there was this guy teaching, Wayne Darling was teaching there, and the school was pretty high level, you know. And I did the audition, and I got in, you know. And I was like, okay, but I don't want to live in Graz, you know, actually, what should I do now? And they had some electric bass, but it was the same teacher that was playing acoustic bass. So basically, I was playing better than him, you know. Mm. And he didn't teach me any electric, so we just did acoustic bass. He was a great acoustic bass player. But of course, you know, seeing Wayne Darling holding an electric bass was funny. You know? Like, you know, not really happening. Yeah. And so, you know, that there was this little thing in my soul. What should I do right now? Because I actually want to go to a bigger city like Vienna or maybe New York or something like that. But I got a great place in Graz. And actually, the Graz was pretty serious because we had like class with 15 bass players from all over the world.
And that's a lot.
They were all better than me. So I thought, okay, that's the right place to be, right?
Yeah, sometimes this is the perfect motivation to
Well, you know, if you come to the little town like this and, you know, you see like almost 20 bass players and everybody's killing, then, you know, not the worst place in the world, you know, to be.
Yeah.
So I decided to stay in Graz, you know. I decided to stay in Graz. And that's after I finished the high school for classical bass in Niš. I was playing a lot of classical on the double bass, which helped me, of course, a lot, you know, because this way you're making your solid technique on the acoustic bass, which is actually pretty heavy, you know.
Yeah.
Double bass is a really heavy instrument at the beginning, you know.
Yeah, and also, you know, when you play classical, then playing with the bow, it's
right.
one more very difficult task to master.
Yeah. But, you know, acoustic bass, you know, like I was always envy about, because I was playing the piano and it was like, you know, you start playing the piano, you sit there and you do like bang and it sounds great. And you play your bass like for 2 years and it sounds like shit. You're out of tune, you don't have a sound, your fingers are hurting, you know, your left hand is not working, you cannot play upper the octave, you know, it's like, man, what a f-ing instrument, you know.
Yeah, takes a lot of
time. It takes a lot of time at the beginning, you know. And you have to practice really, really hard, you know. And back then, we didn't have these amazing pickups like today and everything. Actually, it was a big problem to go with a bass on the amplification and everything. So you actually played mostly acoustic, you know. I had some Wilson pickups back then, and, you know, it was always a struggle, you know, with the bass sound.
Yeah. I mean, if you know, like you said, back then there was no good pickup. So meaning you need to work harder to make it sound right.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. You know, then it was Graz, you know, and I stayed there and there was a huge jazz community over there. We had like amazing workshops, you know, they had big budgets. So we got to play with the guys like Barry Harris or Nils Henning Gosted Pedersen. You know, I was playing on his bass, you know, and I was chatting with the guy every year, you know, imagine that, you know, like it's a huge thing, you know, because you really see Nils Henning coming with his mixer, you know, and the sound system, he was always traveling with his bass, you know, and he had this little he had a Wilson pickup, regular, but he also had a magnetic pickup, like on electric bass, you know, which you couldn't see because it was buried under the fingerboard, you know, and he had very low action strings, and he had also some magic box. We called it a black box because it was silver, but it was a little black box, you know, with some gums. It looked like pretty 40s to me, you know, 1940s. So, but actually it was amazing, you know, to learn from this guy. Of course, he had a brilliant technique and he was playing with everybody, you know, playing all these great solos and having a great groove and everything. But the amazing thing is that he had the same sound on every amp in every room with his bass and this little mixer.
Yeah, he had control. He knew what he wanted and he figured out a way to have a control.
Right, and that was actually really important information for me back then, you know, because we all had strings like this, you know, got strings. We played acoustically, we all wanted to be black guys from Bronx, you know. And I was also playing on the street for many years in Graz, you know, that's how we made a living there also, you know. And it was a common thing, you know, to work on the street because, for example, on Saturday, you could in Kerengasse, in Graz, on Saturday, you had like 15 amazing bands playing on the street with enough the space between the bands so you don't mix the sound, you know. But everybody was playing acoustic, you know.
Yeah.
And playing acoustic on the street, that's where you learn your sound, you know.
Yeah, because it's just you and the bass.
It's you and the bass and 2,000 people talking and all the tracks, you know, everything. So you don't hear yourself. It's like you have to find a way to project that sound, you know.
And to also get attention. of the people. I mean, I found, because I also did my share in playing on the streets with my band Royal Street Orchestra, and I found, you know, it was like a very honest experience. So meaning that if somebody will stay with you, you know, if somebody, I mean, people are going to get groceries or get stuff done, so they have no plan to listen to music. And so if they do, if they decide to stay with you for like a few minutes, then it means you really touched them in some way.
Right.
You know, I found
you got the point. Yes. Yeah.
Good experience. You know,
it's not the easiest job. Everybody who played on the street knows that.
Yeah.
But I think it's really an amazing school for a musician, to be honest with you. So the first thing was obvious, the thing about sound for a bass player especially. It's not a problem for a saxophone player, of course not. But for the bass player, it's really amazing to get your sound on the street. But actually, that's what you were talking about bringing people, you know, to get them to listen to you. That's actually the hardest task on the street.
Yeah.
And, you know, first of all, that's the only way to make some money, you know. So they have to stay there, you know, and listen to you. But, you know, also you feel that's like your award, you know, for being there, you know, and doing stuff. Like, okay, well, I'm not doing this for nothing. Somebody likes what I'm doing, you know, and somebody was touched with our music. And yeah, it's quite a school, you know, to work on the street. Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, I mean, by now that you went to Austria, that was in the 90s.
95, right. 95. I'm 25 years in Austria now.
Yeah. And so by now you have a rich discography as a leader and composer. And on your albums, you are combining the musical tradition of the Balkans with jazz in a very original way. So I would like to know, I mean, how did this all start for you? Because in the perspective, in the perspective of many people from the Balkans, the traditional music is considered to be, especially with young people, they will say, no, I don't want to listen to this music of the peasants, let's say, like this. You know, I want to listen to rock and roll and I am not in there. And at the same time, you know, the tradition is very rich and there's so much to draw from. So I would like to know, you know, like how was the musical tradition always present for you, or did it come to you later, at a later point?
Well, the musical tradition was always present in my life. And I told you I was playing with 16, I was playing folk music, you know. But I have to admit it, I hated it, you know.
Yeah,
I didn't do it because I liked it, you know. I did it because that was the way of getting a gig for a bass, you know. I wanted to play the bass when I was 16, 17, you know. And the only way to get a gig, you know, was to play the folk music too, you know.
Yeah.
And actually, back then, I thought it's like a punishment, you know, because I wanted to play funk music. I wanted to do jazz gigs. I wanted to do heavy metal stuff and everything, you know, but I had to play like, you know, and so I had to come up with a plan, you know, in order to stay alive playing this music, you know. It was like, I started to practice my bass, really, you know. Like, I would decide, for example, this evening, everything I'm going to play tonight is going to be in the fifth position, you know. So I do like 5-hour gig only in fifth position. And then I say like, okay, tomorrow I will play the whole big gig on E and A string. I will not touch D and G, you know.
So you came up with challenges for yourself.
Right, yeah. And then on the next day, I, you know, that the most important things in folk music is about knowing the songs. So you have to, soon you have to find out, like, you have to check like a couple of thousands of songs or hundreds, or I don't know, I never counted, you know. But you really have to be able to know how to play the right notes for all the songs, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you like them or not, or if you know them or not, you know. So I was pretty good at that, because at the same time, you're actually working on your ear, you know, ear training. Mm-hmm. It's a great ear training, and you develop this skill of learning songs fast, which is really important for just playing jazz standards, because that's the same thing. You have to know a lot of songs, you know. And that was actually my approach to this folk music. Was not because I liked it, you know. It was because I could play that, you know, and I had a gig. And that's how it started for me. But on the other hand, you know, when you're young and doing things, you don't know what's going to be next thing in your life, you know. So I actually gained a lot of knowledge about folk music, you know. So first of all, I grew up in the city of Niš, which is actually, we say in Serbia, the biggest gypsy town in Serbia, you know.
Yeah.
So we're lucky enough to have all these gypsy musicians over there. When I grew up with them, you know. I grew up with a feeling that it's not, you know, being academical about music is one thing, you know. But, you know, going into the, center of the music, like, you know, in your soul and your, when you have the music in your veins, you know.
Yeah.
That's what they do. What I like to say is, like, the gypsies have the key of the music, you know. They have the key of the little box where the music is, and they can open it.
But did you also happen to see Shaban Bajramovic live?
Oh, of course, all the time on the streets. Yeah, you could see him every day, you know. I never got the guts, you know, to come to him. I even wrote a song for him and everything, but I never got the guts to go to him and say, hey, hi, can we play together? You know, I'm a little bass player. You couldn't do that with Shaban.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, just the chance to be able to be there and to witness.
Being around him,
It gives you a certain feeling.
I saw him alive a lot of times, you know, being in the places where he was playing and singing. I was neighbor with him because when I was really, really small, I was living in a gypsy quarter, you know, for a short period of time. And it was the same place where he was living, you know. So actually, I you could meet him on the street, you know, walking around with his wife, you know.
Yeah,
he had his place where he was drinking coffee and beer, you know, in the center of town. So you could meet Shaban every day if you want, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great thing, you know. It's Niš has this gypsy fluid, which is really important for my music.
Yeah, but then I mean, from what you just described, you know, having to play this music but not really wanting it. When did it start for you that you felt like this could be a thing for you, and also that you had the inspiration to write original music in this, you know, in this style? How did this grow?
It all came later, you know. After I did my studies in Graz, I was done with studying and I was playing a lot. I was doing all the different stuff, mostly jazz, you know, but playing. I was always thrilled to explore new music. So I always wanted to do a lot of jazz, but I was open for other music styles. You know, I didn't want to be this kind of jazz police, you know, thing where you play only the certain era of jazz, you know, like playing only bebop or hard bop. My thing is jazz. Yeah, that's my first thing. But I was always open for other things too. And I was doing a lot of different things in Graz and in Austria. And I soon I started playing all around Europe and, you know, playing jazz with American cats and everything. But there was something missing, you know, personally for me in this music. You know, I felt like I'm not really the original. I'm being kind of fake, you know, doing jazz only, you know.
Yeah,
that's how I felt, you know, when I stand next to a guy from New York. I felt like he has more right to play jazz than I do, you know, and I didn't like that feeling, you know. I was like, you know, I dedicated my whole life to this bass, so I don't want to feel like I'm not allowed to do something, you know.
Yeah,
I want to go until the end of the road, you know.
Yeah.
And also, you know how it is. We're more or less in the same situation. We both left our countries pretty young, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's a thing that you carry in your heart for your whole life.
Yeah, it's true. And also dealing with the fact that you are suddenly somewhere else and you need to start a new life from scratch with nothing, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that's something. It's quite an experience.
And that was the point, you know, where emotionally just I started to dig, you know, and all these songs that I played in niche when I was young, they just came out, you know.
Yeah.
Everything just came out and I was like, man, this music is so good and so nice, you know, and you don't actually have to play the standards only, you know. And I was open enough to be aware of that, you know. So I was like, why don't we try to mix some things to mix some jazz that we're playing with this folks music and see what it's all about, you know?
Yeah.
If we can come up with something. And there was another guitar player, Zoran Čekić, from Zagreb. We were pretty good friends, playing a lot together. We are doing some experimental jazz music and you know, some free stuff also, you know, and some experimental classical thing with jazz, you know, so the modern thing. And we both decided to start exploring, you know, like we brought like song, like Utem Somboru, for example. That was the first song I did. It got recorded or maybe with a bassist or something. And we started exploring this, you know, and it was like the sky opened, you know, suddenly. It was like, you know, that feeling, you know, it was like, man, that's it. That's what we're looking for, you know. That's what I wanted to do, you know, actually. And then you realize that you're so hip because you know a couple of hundreds of songs that nobody else does, you know, because you live in Austria, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, I know, like, when I remember, for me, was kind of similar because around maybe 2001 or something, you know, I came to here to listen to Sandy Lopicic Orchestra. He's also living in Graz. That was my first. And they did the first album, Border Confusion. I mean, they played like traditional songs, but with the big band and modern arrangements. And I was like, wow, okay, this also can be done with this type of music. Amazing.
This works.
Yeah, yeah. And then this is what brought it back to me. Of course, I mean, when I was in Yugoslavia, I didn't play this type of music, but it was still around, you know, it was still around and I was listening to it, you know. But back then I was like, no, I'm a rock guy, you know, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And then hearing this album brought it back to me. And also, as I told you, your album, Balkan Songs, because my father gave it to me. I think he bought it in Sarajevo.
Okay, yeah. You mean the folk songs?
Yeah, folk songs, not Balkan songs. Yeah. And he brought it to me. And I mean, I still do love it. And this album also, yeah. And this album also was very influential for my
path. I'm very pleased to hear that.
You know, and then because just, you know, the combination between the tradition and improvisation, modern elements, jazz, and also the sound you had on that album, that was what really drew me to it. And I, you know, I still love it to this day.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the first album was pretty interesting journey, you know, because I was in Graz and I was trying to persuade jazz guys to play this music, you know. And I remember there was a German saxophone player over there. I forgot his name, and I tried to play with him. Seyde Fumaika Budjashe, probably. He was like, "What's this? This is nothing." And he didn't want to do it, you know. And then actually it was pretty hard to find the guys. And then later he came to me and he was like, oh man, I made a mistake. I said, well, now it's too late, you know. I have five other guys playing your place, you know. So it was pretty new. I also, but not only the American or Austrian musicians or German musicians, I also had trouble with the Yugoslavian guys. They couldn't do it, you know, because for somebody who never played this music or never liked it, you know, which I can understand, you know.
Yeah.
you want to do some jazz stuff. You're not interested in folklore music when you're 20. And these guys couldn't play this music at all. You know, It was like,
Yeah, I mean, it's a different language in all regards, like especially also rhythmically, you know, with all the odd meter stuff. It's not for everyone.
Right.
And also
especially
like, there's something, but what I found like with the odd meter stuff, many try to access it by their brains, you know, but I think most important is to just feel it. Not to think too much.
Well, you know, what I like to say about the bass to my students is always the same, you know. I think, and it's not just about the bass or about the bass only, it's about everything in your life. I think you have to combine all the skills.
Yeah.
So all the skills and emotions, you know, because doing just with emotion is not enough, you know, because if you don't know what you're doing, it's hard. But doing only with your brain is exactly not enough, like only if you do it by heart. So you have to really combine it all, you know, in order to make it work, you know.
Yeah.
And I think in everything you do, you just have to combine as many sides of human being, you know, to make that thing complex and you know, interesting for everybody else to hear.
Yeah, I agree. In the Balkans, for instance, the people who like traditional music, they are mostly interested. They are very strict, you know, sticking to the tradition. And if you try to do something else, like combine it, they just say, no, it's too modern. You know, we don't want to have jazz in our music. And also the same phenomenon can be witnessed with many jazz lovers or like for that matter, in any kind of music. There are lots of people who are like puristic, you know, and they don't want to have the mix of styles. At the same time, I mean, the albums you did, I think you did 12 by now.
Yes, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they are held in high regard by the press, by the music press, for instance, from all over the world. And they are also listened to by people from all over the world. So
yes, that's the most important.
Yeah, and that's what I want to ask you about. Like, you know, starting from that point where you start to go that way, and now, like 25 years later, you have a career and you have like lots of albums. So how was your experience with the perception, like how the music was perceived by people?
Well, Armin, we're all in the same shoes, probably. You know, but you know exactly as good as I do that the minute you're not. The minute you don't want to put the label on your back, then you're in trouble.
You have a problem.
So people want to label you, you know, so they can deal with you easier, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're kind of guy that doesn't want to be labeled, you know, then you have to fight for that, you know.
Yeah.
You have to fight for that not having something on your back, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to check all the time if there is something on your back, you know.
Yeah.
People tried to label me as a world musician and Balkan guy, you know, but I was actually doing a lot more of jazz festivals than world festivals, you know, far more. Then, you know, so the jazz guys were always like, no, you know, well, that's world, you know, that's not jazz, or at least it has to be world jazz. Okay. I never say anything, you know, I just do my thing. So then you go and you play a gypsy festival with Martin Lubanov, then they say, oh man, that's too much jazz, you know, that's jazz, you know.
But that's what I mean, you know, like.
Right. You know, then you're doing your double bass thing. And I'm also doing the same thing with the double bass. I'm using so many different techniques on my double bass, you know. And then the guys are like, well, you know, that's not really a classical technique. I know. It's a combination of all, you know. That's the point. You know?
Yeah.
I think, well, you need some kind of straightness, you know, I don't know, some belief, you know. I don't know how to put it. To stay in this world and try not to be labeled, you know.
Yeah.
You have to have the guts for that, because everybody is attacking you, because some of them are just afraid that you're walking around without label, because they would be scared to not have any label.
That's what I want to say. So many are really scared. of it, you know. If you take the freedom to just say, I'm, you know, I'm not this or that, I'm just a musician and I love to play everything which, you know, which affects me in some way.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think, you know, when I talk to my son or my daughter, or when I talk to my students, I cannot stress that enough. You have to fight to be yourself, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like your arm in your left hand. You like the music that you like. You know, you came from the country, living in another country. You're such a unique combination. There is no two arms over there, you know?
Yeah.
You just have to be yourself, you know? And... that's what I'm doing on my albums. Actually, I'm exploring. I'm searching. I'm trying to do different things. You know, I sometimes record something that could be done better. You know, but that's the point. You know, of testing things. If something is working together, you know, if something could be done or not. You know, for example, my first thing was a really big test was. Playing, for example, three parts of songs like Shesher Moy, or we were doing some free parts of the free approach to the songs like Shaban's songs, Ibar Valpudela, and things like that. You know, you're bringing two worlds together. I don't know. For me, I'm excited at that moment. You know, when I know. The original song, and then we're working that with some guys from all over the globe, you know, recording it somewhere, you know, bringing that song to other people, and it's pretty exciting, you know. I have to be honest with you, sometimes when I do jazz standards only playing on these stages, sometimes it's amazing, you know, but a lot of times, man, I feel like, well, I wish I worked in a bank, you know.
Because it's
rather than staying on big stage.
Yeah, you know, because it misses the element you just talked about to have the courage to go somewhere else with it. And I also think, you know, approaching it that way is also allowing the tradition to still stay alive, you know, and to grow, you know. I mean, if that's what it's needed, I think.
Of course, I think this music is good enough, you know. The Balkan music is so rich, you know. It's unexplored, actually. It's really unexplored. So I think it deserves to be worked on, you know. It deserves to live, to be there. So, and it's a lot of fun, you know. I remember my first attempt to play the bass solo over Eleno Kerko on 7/8. It was like, okay, I know the song. I play 7/8 my whole life, but I cannot play the solo.
Yeah, because sounds like improvising improvising over it is different.
Yeah. So I, you know, then you start practicing that thing, you know, and it makes your whole universe, you know, open up.
Yeah. Yeah, but then, you know, when we're talking about your discography. Like we just said, you have recorded 12 albums and very different lineups, you know, with many different musicians.
Yes.
Some are like with the big band, and then others are like just a duo or like trio, you know. But there are two albums which are very different from all the others. And this is the first being The Art of Balkan Bass from 2014. Right. And the second is called Bass Room from last year, from 2019. And on those albums, it's just you playing. Like, it's just you with the bass. And also, you do no overdubs.
No.
So they are real solo albums. And it's just you with your bass. And you play, you know, just by yourself. But still, when one listens to it, it sounds like a whole band was playing. So.
Oh, thank you very much.
Actually, it's nothing missing, you know.
Yeah, the thing with the solo bass is this is something totally different, you know. It started like this, you know. Actually, I'm a huge fan of a good audio sound, you know. That's what I'm really, you know, working on for years, you know. And I always experiment with bass recordings and, you know, different mics and preamps and everything, you know, with my double bass. And, you know, doing that, actually, I just get my bass out and play, you know, and try mics, you know, and come up with little songs and, you know, and I was doing that for years. And suddenly you realize, okay, you know, you have so many different songs, so it's a lot of material, actually. It sounds great. It's totally different. Again, you have to have the courage to bring that, you know, to the world.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's again something different, you know, like playing alone.
Yeah, and especially, it's, you know, you are, let's say you are really naked because it's only you and you can hear like the slightest nuance and
everything. You can everything, hear everything.
And there's no way you can hide anywhere.
Right. And, you know, so I did it, you know, actually. And I was talking to different people and they were like, man, it sounds great. It's so interesting. Why don't you put this out? And I was like, well, not really sure about it, you know. And it stayed for a while. I never thought about it again, you know. And but it came again and again to me, you know, because I was working on that stuff and, you know, doing that stuff. And finally, I decided to maybe try to put the CD together and then eventually not putting it out, you know, but just to make just it for me it. To see how it works.
Yeah.
And that's what I did, you know. I just did the whole CD. It had like 15 songs and everything. It was the first version of the art of Balkan bass. And I was like, well, what I'm doing is actually Balkan bass, but not in the sense of how people are reacting to Balkan music. Like, okay, let's go dance, you know. But mm-hmm. actually, that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm playing this sophisticated stuff on my double bass, but it's buried under all the instruments, you know. So actually, on most of the stuff, I was actually just playing what I play normally, you know.
Yeah.
But when you solo the bass, that's how it sounds, you know. And I was doing that, and I, to be honest with you, I was like, no, I cannot put the album like this, you know. It's like too much, you know. And then Bojan came to me and he was like, okay, let me hear that shit, what you're doing, you know.
Bojan
Zofi Krpašić, yeah.
Yeah.
And I sent him, and he called like a day after that and he said, hey, put it out.
Yeah.
And I recorded two more songs, which are Vranjanka and the Burn from Deep Purple with his pants. And I recorded that two songs, made the videos, and put them on the CD, and then I put them out, you know. And it was amazing, you know. That was totally a surprise for me, you know, because I didn't expect anything like that. First of all, these videos got really viral, you know. It was amazing. Like, they were everywhere, you know.
And I was so happy. I was so happy to see, you know, also this video is being shared by the bass community, you know, and I was so happy that to find people really getting it, you know, and feeling it. And so it was
really special. Amazing. You know, I was really surprised and pleased at the same time, you know, for many reasons. You know, first of all, I was playing the bass alone, you know, so the fact that anybody's willing to listen to that anyway, you know, is like a great thing. And then second of all, I'm doing two of my passions, you know, like playing Deep Purple and playing Balkan folk songs, you know, like doing totally two different. I mean, how can you connect Deep Purple with Vranjanka, you know? But for me, it's the same thing, you know. It's like,
yeah, it's the same pleasure,
right? And then I put these two videos out. It was a huge thing, you know, and this CD was selling like crazy, you know. The guys in the Hong Kong, they went crazy about the sound and everything. And people started calling me for the solo concerts, you know. And I was like, hey, now this is getting serious, you know.
Mm.
And I remember playing the first solo concert in Vienna. And I went to the club, you know, and I started to play. Man, that was like I was born again, you know. It was so difficult.
Oh, yeah.
I never, you know, because you're playing, then you stop, then you have to say something. Then you have to start playing again, you know, and then you stop and then you have to say something again, you know. And it's like, man, and I'm just a bass player, you know. I'm sitting behind doing my shit, you know. you know how it is. We're in the same job, you know.
Usually in the band context, we are pretty much, you know, just in the back of it. And we feel good there, you know.
So, well, you choose to be a bass player because you like to be behind in the fundamental thing of the band. And, you know, if you would like to be a singer, then you would go in front, you know, you would not play the bass.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first solo concert, that was like, I thought I'm going to embarrass myself, you know, and that's going to be the worst thing in the world. And it was really heavy experience of me playing 1.5 hour for people without a stop, you know. I thought I'm going to die, you know. My hands were hurting, you know, because you're actually soloing at 1.5 hour, you know. You're not just doing bass lines. And that was, you know, I was totally wet, you know. I was in water, you know. But the people were happy, you know, and I was like, oh man, I have so many things that I have to, that I need to practice, you know. It's like totally, this gig is not happening, you know. This is totally, you know, I have to prepare myself better for this, you know.
Yeah.
And then I started playing solo concerts, you know, and it got really serious, you know, where I was really like preparing myself for a couple of weeks before every concert. And then it was always less, like 1 week before the concert, practicing and doing stuff. And I did like more than 20 concerts of solo bass, which was actually something that I didn't expect at all, you know.
Yeah.
And selling all these records and everything. And by working on the material for the concerts, I came up with a whole another CD, which was a bass room, actually.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's how it happened. And the bass room is actually working great, but now we know about the thing, you know. So we're not surprised, you know. It's just people like solo bass. And there is another thing. The minute I realized that the John Patitucci and Larry Grenadier, they made a solo of CDs in the same year as I did the bass room, my second one, after 5 years, after the Art of the Balkan Bass. It was like, okay, that's amazing, you know.
I'm not alone.
Yeah, because I was looking for solo CDs when I was doing the bass, the Art of the Balkan Bass, you know, just for the sound, for the idea. And all I could find was some ECM stuff from Dave Holland and what's his name? I forgot. Flip Phillips. I don't know. I have to find out. You know, like two or three CDs, one from Ron Carter, not much more than that. And then 2 years later, you have all these solo bass CDs with Adam Ben Ezra, with John Patitucci, with Larry Grenadier, you know. And it's like a cool thing, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but you just also mentioned that you have a new album coming.
Yes.
And it's bass with strings. So what is it? Is it a quartet or is it a bigger...
Actually,
ensemble.
I'm preparing three albums at the moment.
Okay.
The first one that's going to come out is actually a compilation of my previous songs. And this is coming out on the 4th of December.
Like a best of?
Like the best of, volume one. It's going to be a volume two also. But this is volume one, a compilation coming out with the old songs, newly remastered. And this is going to be something to put out in December. And the next thing that I'm working on is actually what I told you already. It's bass with the strings. And what we're working on for a long time is a recording of my songs with a big band.
Oh, yeah.
And we did all the arrangements. Everything is prepared. But we were supposed to open Jazz Festival in Belgrade with that. But it was supposed to be in October, but it moved to December, and now we're waiting if it's going to be canceled or not, you know. Mm. But I strongly hope that I'm going to be able to open the Belgrade Jazz Festival with that program, you know. With the big band.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have all the preparation, everything is done. I'm working on that for like years, you know. Then the last year I was working really hard, and now we have 10 arrangements of my songs done for the big band, with three different arrangements from the USA, from Serbia, from Macedonia, Austria, and the stuff is done. Sounds great. It sounds amazing. I look forward to play these songs because, you know, it's my compositions, but arranged by other people, you know.
It's different, yeah, because there's a different perspective. And also with the big band, you have many possibilities for instrumentation, right, and right. arrangements.
And, you know, some of the bass lines are so heavy, I have to practice them now. So I have to practice the bass for my own songs, which is a new experience. Yeah. And this is something I've been waiting for a long, long time. You know, I have this idea for like 15 years, and I thought, okay, you know, maybe now's the time. You know, that's the what we talked on the beginning about the corona. If there is anything good about the corona, then this, that yeah. I managed to finally organize arrangements for my music, for the big band at least, you know. This is something I couldn't done before, you know, because you just don't have time to do that.
Yeah, and also some ideas, I think, take time, not just for the reason that you have a lack of time, but also because they need time to grow. So I'm also very curious, you know, to see, to listen to your new, because I'm very familiar with the old albums, but this will be different.
This thing with the strings is working pretty well because I'm playing mostly fretless bass, you know.
Oh, electric.
And, oh yes, I'm doing a lot of fretless bass on these songs and. Gonna be pretty interesting. It's a very good mixture, you know, with the fretless and strings.
Additionally to your work as a leader, you are also working as a sideman, meaning that you also play bass for other artists.
Oh yes.
And most notably, at least from what I'm seeing in the last couple of years, you played a lot with the Bosnian singer Amira Medunjanin. And so I would like to know, what can you say about this cooperation? And also, how would you describe for yourself the difference between working as a leader and working as a sideman?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when you're a bass player, the first thing you get to do in your life and your career is playing the sideman gigs, right? So yeah. Before I started working as a band leader, I was working for years as a sideman, you know. So, and also then when I started, my first album was like 2000 folk songs, and I also worked as a sideman for many years after that, you know. But then in one point, you know, you get to build this. You just had enough of the old assignment jobs that you did, you know. So you basically try to choose the right ones, you know, and you know, try to choose the assignment jobs where you can actually, you know, bring something to the table, you know.
Like, yeah, I'm not like, just be like a machine, bass machine.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, the thing with the project with Amira Medunjanin was a thing like that. You know, she called me. I didn't know who she was, and she told me that she's making a band with Vlatko Stefanovski, Bashar Khalife, and Bojan Zofi Krpašić. And when you hear a call like that, you would say, "Yes, I want to be there." You know.
Of course,
especially I know Bojan for so many years, you know, and we work together, and I always wanted to work more with Bojan, you know, because he's one amazing musician musician, as we all know. And then I also worked with Vlatko Stefanovski, and I wanted to work more with him, you know. And Bashar Khalife, I knew about the Khalife family from Paris, but I didn't work with him. So that was an occasion, you know, to maybe do something with him. And then it was just a call. I remember it was, I think, 2010. She called me if I have a week to work with them on the new album in Leipzig.
Mm.
I was like, okay, Leipzig. Why not?
Yeah.
It was good enough for so many composers, so it should be good enough for us too. And, you know, there was this Walter Quintus, late Walter Quintus, who was actually producing the whole stuff together with Bojan. And we actually met in Leipzig, not knowing each other. I knew Bojan, Bojan knew me. And that was the story, you know, that was the really beginning of the whole adventure with Amira. And the recording was like pretty crazy, you know. There was, we had difficulties with the mix pult for the 2 days. We were not doing anything, you know, just having food and talking, playing, you know. We didn't record a single note, you know, for 2 days. It was just, you know, having fun, you know. But you know it's going to come up fine, you know. And then we had some, you know, difficulties with musicians. Then some of them were gone after 2 days. Then we had some new musicians coming up to the studio. It was pretty chaotic, you know. But the first thing I remember that we recorded, it was the song that we actually didn't know that we were recording. So because I was in the hall playing the bass, and Amira was in the booth, you know, somewhere over there, you know, and we were playing Bele Ruge, you mm-hmm. know, from Shaban. And mm-hmm. actually for me, it was from Zvonko, you know, but Zvonko Bogdan. But Amira liked the version with Shaban better. So for Amira, it was playing Shaban, and for me, it was playing Zvonko, you know. And I was staying there, and we were doing this almost not touching the instruments, almost not, you know, just the two of us, you know, trying things. Actually, I was checking the key because I think it was some strange key. I don't know, you know, she would just try to start to sing. And then somebody just put the mic on the bass, you know, and we were doing that so I can have something in my headphones. And it was done, you know. We didn't know it was even recorded, you know. We asked Walter after that, did you record that thing? And he said, you bet I did. You know? And he was like, of course I did, you know. And we all forgot about it, you know. At least I, you know, I never thought about it because we had all these hit tunes, you know, like Mario Bela Kumrio was like amazing, you know, and Jovka Kumanovka, and so many nice songs, you know. It was really an amazing session, you know. Yeah, I really enjoyed
album.
A lot. You know?
Great album.
And I was really, there was one story about this session. I will tell you that I don't think we ever talked about it. But actually, Kafu Midraga I Speci was the trio song. So we started playing with the bass, piano, and the voice. And it was amazing, you know. And suddenly, after 2 takes, I think we got it. I never heard it after that. But I think it's recorded. And as far as I remember, this sounded really great. Walter thought, like, why don't we do another duo song with the piano and the voice of the same, of the Kafu Midraga I Speci? And we were like, yeah, great idea. I went outside and they were recording 2 or 3 takes. But we were all sure the trio version is going to be on the CD, you know. But they had also this duo version, for that matter. And then, after the mixing was done and everything, I got the CD, and the opener was Bele Ruge with duo bass and voice. And I'm like, did we even record that thing? And it was like, oh, man, you know, this huge bass sound coming out. I was like, wow, this is beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was playing really, really minimalistic, which I adore, you know. I like playing less always, you know, if possible. Yeah. And with this beautiful Amira's voice and opening the album with a bass and voice, it was like, you know, really a nice thing. Yeah. And then I, you know, it was the first thing that was like, wow, man, great, you know. And Walter did a great sound and everything. But then you hear, what happened to that bass on Kafu Midraga I Speci? Did you put that out, you motherfuckers? But they had this huge, you know, duo thing with Kafu Midraga I Speci, which was basically the main thing on our concerts later, you know, this duo stuff. It was a good decision, actually, if you ask me. As a producer, I would do the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I felt kind of sorry, you know, not being there on that song, you know? But yes. I got my opener, so you know, basically so it was okay.
It evened out. Yeah.
And working in this band was, I have to say, it was really amazing. It was really amazing. because we ended up on the end working as a trio. You know, it was Bojan, me, and Amira. You know, and Bojan and I, we really played our asses off. It wasn't like, you know, camping a singer. No, we were really playing, you know, and we were playing these huge, huge stages, you know, with a lot of people. It wasn't a jazz thing, you know. We were playing for at least 1,000 people, 500 people, 2,000, 5,000 people, you know, and you start playing in front of the of 5,000 people in Belgrade, and the second song is a bass solo, you know, thing, like, play alone, you know, not having even anybody out there. You're alone, boy, and it's playing some clink, 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 you know. You're like doing the solo in Salad Center, you know, for like, it was amazing, amazing experience, actually, you know, when Amira was doing a great, great job. Playing with Bojan was a lecture every time on the stage, you know.
I can imagine.
Playing with your favorite guy every time and getting paid for that. Yeah. It's like, great, you know. So it was a great experience, I have to say, you know. It was really like doing two CDs. The second one, I was also a little bit more producing because I was mixing the second CD, the Silk and Stone. Mm. We recorded it live in Lisinski. It was recorded in Lisinski room, just one take. And it was a huge task to mix that thing, you know, and make it work. So it was a great experience to work with these guys, you know.
Yeah, and also what I have been listening to the recordings a lot, and what I also like, you know, is that there's so much coming together. I mean, she started out as a Sevdah singer, meaning that she sang the old Sevdah songs, but then she's not doing just that. She's also singing, like, I don't know, Macedonian songs,
right?
Serbian songs, yeah. Like also some which are not in the traditional music at all, and but then, you know, having all of this combined in the way like you did, it sounds very homogenic and natural.
We are talking again about being open. I'm talking now about Amira, first of all. Imagine any other singer being able to play with Bojan and me, you know, on the stage. It's like you know, we were playing our asses off, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy for a folk singer, you know, to be there on that stage, you know, and she was there, you know.
Yeah, to get all of it and
she was there. That's the first thing. And the second thing that I really admire about her is she really feels the South Serbian music, the Macedonian music. She really loves that. No,
it's that's
not
what
like
I mean,
being,
you know?
Being hype and doing some cool stuff. It's not about that. She really loves that song, you know, that she was singing from Macedonia or from South Serbia and everything. And she's trying her best to really play them well, you know.
And to do it justice. But yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I love about it too.
Well, there is another project that I did with her, actually, without Bojan, and that was a big band almost. We had 10 different people from 10 different Balkan countries, musicians. I put up together a great band, you know, and I wrote the arrangements for that. And we opened the Olympic Games in London with that band on the Trafalgar Square. You know, we were playing there and a couple more gigs in Sarajevo and everything. And she was doing there that was even more improvised with more jazz, really like jazz arrangements and everything, you know. There is some videos from the Sarajevo concert and then London concert online. That's something completely different. You could see she's really open, you know, for doing different stuff, you know. And we did a couple of great things together. I'm really proud of that, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, we had a lot of fun, you know. It's like we laughed like all the time, you know. Like I remember being on tour in Scandinavia, you know. No, it was like it was sick, you know, with Bojan and her, you know, like having jokes all the time, 10 hours a day, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you earlier you talked about, you know, choosing the jobs, the sideman jobs you want to do. And I think, I mean, I have been going through the same experience and then, but I think this aspect, you know, of really having a good time together and having fun on the road is very important, because if you don't have that, then it becomes like just, you could also be work in anything else just to get money, you know. So
yeah,
and right. And I also think it shows in the music, you know. I think you cannot, at least for me, when I'm not feeling well with the people. I mean, I can play with anyone. It's no problem, but it's not gonna cross a certain point, you know.
Right. If you don't have that magical thing going on between you and another musician, it's hard. And being on tour with guys that you don't really at least dig, you know, at some you know, basic level, then it's really,
it's difficult.
It's easier, you know, to like the guys we are playing with.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so but you're nowadays you're still living in Vienna. Like,
yes,
as you said, for like 25 years.
Mm.
And Vienna is a city which is, of course, has a rich history, you know, like cultural, and you could be seen as a crossing point of many different cultures, West right. and East, and I don't know. But at the same time, at least from where I'm looking at it, one gets the impression that living in Vienna as a foreigner is not necessarily easy, you know?
No.
And so I would like to ask you that, like, how do you feel as a foreigner in Austria and in Vienna? And what are the experiences you are making?
I'm here for a long time and I managed to make an international career, you know, and that's one of the things that helps me stay in Vienna, you know.
Yeah.
Because if I would be a local guy, you know, I don't think I would stay here for too long, you know. Being a foreigner in Vienna is actually pain in the ass, you know. These people here would never confronted like Germans, you know, with the Second World War, you know. They're still saying they were occupied, you know, by Germans and things like that, which is actually not true, you know. And we all know that. We all know the history. We don't need to go there. But, you know, actually, they were not being honest to the world, you know. And they were not being honest to their kids and to each other, you know, to their selves, you know. And actually, there are a lot of nice people here, you know, and it's nothing wrong with Vienna. Everything is cool, you know. I don't want to sound too harsh, you know, on them right now, you know. But they have a problem they need to work on, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they need to confront that, especially in this country where you have a lot of foreign people, you know, a lot of strangers, a lot of people that actually are this country, you know.
Yeah.
All of us actually works on the image of this country and Vienna and everything, you know. And, you know, it's pretty easy when you do some serious stuff, then you're a Vienna's bass player, you know, Austrian jazz musician. Somebody wrote in Wikipedia that I'm an Austrian jazz musician. I don't have anything against it, as long as I can say loud what I think, you know. So basically, I'm recording songs like Gavrilos Princip, and I go to ORF and have 1 hour broadcast on their shows, you know, with songs like that. You know, I had songs like Lily Merlin playing in minor, you know. You know, I'm doing that stuff for like 25 years. They know me well, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm criticize them. I'm you know, I say loud what I think, you know, and you know, you don't get all the love in the world for doing that. Of course not.
Of course not. It's not the...
But it's important. It's important to do so, you know. And you know, when I talk to my kids here and everything, I think it's getting better, you know, because it's not like you're gonna have any trouble on the street, you know. It's not like somebody's gonna come to you and make something bad to you. But the vibe, you know, the way the people are looking at the strangers here is like, you know.
Yeah, it's more subtle, but still,
right. Yeah.
But it still has an effect if you have to live it every day.
Of course. And, you know, it's always like, you know, things like, of course, you're not going to get the best job in the world here, you know. Because you're a stranger, you know. There's some, actually, I never got a teaching place in Austria. I got it in Germany, you know.
Interesting.
You know, I got an amazing teaching job in Germany, in Berlin. I played a couple of gigs in Berlin. That's in my life. That's it, you know. I never lived there. I don't know a single person over there. I just played the, played the concert over there, you know, and they got me in, you know, me and 30 other bass players, you know. And in Vienna, you will not get a chance like that, no way, because you're a foreigner, you
because
know.
Because you're not from there, yeah.
And that's sad. How it works. You know, this other thing, Austria is very small, you know. It's like the whole Austria is like two Berlins, you know. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So you would say there's a lot of competition in general due to the fact that it's so small?
Oh, no. In Austria?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't think there is a lot of competition, okay. to be honest. I mean, for the bass players, you mean? I don't think so, no. Yeah. Actually, not so many different musicians that are participating the creativity of music, in my opinion. I don't know, you know, because the scene here is very closed. You know, there is this whole jazz police scene, which is actually working, actually not working. And there is this huge world scene, which is actually, we could talk about that, you know, but a lot of people claiming being a world musicians or whatever that means, you know, they are working here in Vienna, you know, there is the whole scene about it, but more serious than that, actually, it's not happening here at the moment, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
So not a lot of competition. That's also the problem, you know. So basically they just wait for a new guy to come. And I remember every time there is an Austrian bass player here, they just, oh, the new Austrian bass player. Great. So you're the best man. I'm not. You are. Okay, I am.
Yeah,
that's how it works, you know.
It's strange how those type of things work.
We'll give you all the jobs. Man, you have all the concerts because you're the best. I'm not. You are. I am.
This is really strange.
Kind of that thing, you know. But, you know, it's Vienna, you know.
Yeah. Okay. But so if we go back to the Balkans, also in a similar sense, I mean, like the wars, the Balkan wars are now over for at least 20 years,
right.
like, you know, depending on where.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at the political and societal situation, which is present there right now, one could say, sadly, you know, in all of the countries, it has not improved a lot, you know. So how do you see all of this, and what would need to happen to make a change, which would eventually lead to people being able to live a better life in the future?
Well, you know, that's the subject that needs another hour, probably, at least, you know. It's not that easy, you know. We have this, how should I put it the best? The Western world is not making it any easier for us to get back to the right road, you know. That's my feeling for the last 30 years, actually, you know. They are pushing us really hard, you know. They want us to have a conflict between us, you know. And I don't say that's so important, you know, in the sense that if somebody wants you to have a conflict, you should have a conflict. But it's more difficult to come back to the right way, you know. That's one thing. And I don't want to say also that the Western world is only guilty for what happened on the Balkans, but they're much more guilty than they think they are. You know, that's the first thing that we need to say here, you know, because showing Balkan people, Balkan folk people, Balkan folk in reality as people that hate each other is not true. We do not hate each other. Not at all, you know. There was a lot of difficulties over there. But still, also, today, you can travel as Serb everywhere. You can travel as Croat. You can travel as a Bosnian guy. You still have a lot of Bosnian people in Serbia. They were always there. Nobody left Serbia. you know? So it's much, much more complex than that, you know? It's one thing. And the second thing, you know, to be honest with you, I think that things are getting better, but they're getting better really slow.
Very slow. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I can see, for example, in Serbia, that Serbia is living better than before, you know. We can now, you know, discuss about the political thing and about Vučić and about this and that, but I don't want to do that. No. What I see is actually things are getting better, but it's really slow because of the first thing that I told you. The Western world doesn't want us to recover because this way we can serve them better. You know?
Yeah, and they can, you know, can keep control, and they can put, you know, the hyper capitalism
right
in there.
Yeah. So, but what we can judge, like, you know, you can see the Europe and the world is full with Balkan people from Bosnia, from Croatia, from Macedonia, from Serbia, from Montenegro, from everywhere. People are, you know, doing great jobs all over the world, you know, showing some respect to other nations, you know, and doing their jobs really well and, you know, making it good for their country, for our countries. And I think we have some kind of the destiny of the Jewish people right now. You know, we're facing actually that. That's what I'm seeing with having almost, I don't know, you know, the numbers, but I would say there is at least so many people out of the Balkan countries in the world as in the Balkans right now, right?
Yeah, and becoming more and more every
and more,
single
right?
Day.
So we're facing this thing with a lot of Balkan guys living out of the Balkan countries.
Yeah. No. The so-called brain drain. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening, you know. But on the other hand, I see that, for example, with Amira, we did like two or three years ago, I don't know, we did like 20 concerts in Croatia in one summer. I mean, sorry, but I cannot do 30 concerts in one summer in Austria, you know.
Yeah, and if you go and do it, you will find that, you know, it's the reception is great everywhere and
right.
Warm.
The reception was great. We had great audience, beautiful stages, you know. Croatia is beautiful, you know, and things like that. Then you also have, before that, we had like tens of great concerts in Serbia with Amira and with my band and with Bojan and also only my projects. And I was doing one of the first great solo bass concerts I did in Belgrade, not in Vienna, you know.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. So the things are getting better, you know, and the musicians are better paid than before, and everything is working out slow. I see that the Soko is working again, you know, this GEMA AKM thing, you know, that starts to work there, and the things are recovering. So we can just, you know, do our jobs, do our best, you know, for our countries, you know, and hope for the best.
Yeah, but so in your point of view or your perspective on it is quite optimistic. And this is something I like a lot because we need this type of energy, you know.
Right.
Down there.
It's really important to stop criticize things and start bringing good energy and good vibe to the table.
You know? I agree.
Well, that's how I see the things, you know. So we can sit down and cry, you know, talk about this and that, you know, or we can do our best, you know, to laugh and bring positive stuff, you know, as much as we can. And the best thing, what I'm seeing, the best thing to do is actually you just do your job the best you can. And the people are looking at you and they get hope, you know. I see many bands from Serbia and many bass players from Serbia and people looking at what I do and they like it, so they do their shit, you know, and it's going forward, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was looking at some guys, you know, that are doing their job good and I was motivated to do my thing, you know, and I think that's the most important thing, you know.
Yeah, and this is also, you know, the possibility and power we as musicians have, and we need to use it. I agree with you.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So if you would try to, you know, to look at the future, I mean, you already said, you know, you told me about some things which are coming up, like the teaching gig in Berlin or the new albums. But are there any particular ideas, wishes, or dreams which you want to realize for yourself in the future, which you did not realize yet?
You mean musically?
In general.
In general.
Can be musically, but can also be in general.
Yeah, well, the musical things I already told you about, the big band was kind of a dream coming true, you know. And I'm always dreaming of some kind of the heavy metal band that I'm going to play in, you know. I still hope, you know, to get in a band, you know, with the bass, you know, and, you know, be loud.
Yeah, you know? I can relate.
That's one of the things, you know, and privately, you know, like, I'm always trying to get more balanced, you know, inside. That's what my main aim is, because once you get more balanced, I think you're more productive then.
Yeah, everything works better.
Right. Yeah. So maybe moving from Vienna, you know, more, but I'm traveling a lot anyway. So I'm basically living a lot on the road in Vienna, and I'm also visiting Serbia all the time, Balkany, you know, and but maybe, you know, this teaching job is maybe an opportunity to move to Berlin or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a too long time to stay 25 years in Austria, you know, so it's time to move.
Yeah, come to Germany, man.
Yeah,
I would love to have you here.
it's easy because of the language and everything, you know. So it's not impossible, you know. Let's see.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
What dear God wants for me, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. So I would say we are approaching the end of our conversation for today. Yeah. We have talked about many topics,
right?
And of course, the guest shall have the final say. So is there anything you would like to share with our listeners to end the conversation?
Of course, yeah. Play the music, play the bass, be positive, stay well, you know, try to think positive in these crazy times, and let's hope for the best, you know, but stay on it, make music.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only second that. Cool. Okay, man. So I would like to
say thank you, Armin.
Thanks a lot. It was amazing that we finally get the chance to talk in that in detail, and then also do it in a way which will be available for people to listen to.
Yeah, great, great. I'm totally grateful to you, and I had a lot of fun.
Me too, man. So thank you very much. And
thank you, Armin.
Stay healthy and stay safe, and hopefully see you sometime in real life too.
Of course. Now when I'm starting working in Berlin, we're probably going to meet in Germany somewhere.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so thank you, man. Have a nice day.
You too, man.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
You have been listening to Talking Spirits Podcast, episode number 24, with Armin Alic and Nenad Vasilic. Thank you for staying with us today. We hope you enjoyed our offerings. And next week, we are arriving at the final episode of season 2. My guest is the German guitarist Thorsten Zahler. If you want to listen to the other episodes so far, please visit www.talkingspiritspodcast.com. There you have also the opportunity to contact me if there's anything you want to share with me. If you like what you heard, please feel free to subscribe to the Talking Spirits Podcast at the channel of your liking. And also feel free to place a rating of the show where this is possible. Stay healthy, have a good day, and see you again next Sunday. Bye!